season, elimination games last season before they were eliminated in the third such game in Game 5 against the Panthers last season. But they won Game 6 against the Lightning, and they won Game 4, staving off elimination against the Panthers as well. So Sheldon Keefe talking about the issues Maple Leafs have had on special teams and in the crease. So much of, I think, our conversations have been about Jeremy Swayman and what the Bruins are doing right in the crease and the goaltending advantage they have, because they have two great, great goalies. And even in Game 2, the one game they've lost in the series, Linus Ullmark was otherworldly at times in that hockey game. And Jeremy Swayman literally has not lost to the Maple Leafs this season in now 7 games for him.
Yep.
So that's definitely part of it. Like, Bruins have gotten great goaltending. And if we're just going on, like, eye test, like, the one goal that stands out as far as Ilya Samsonov not being able to stop it, yeah, is the Trent Frederick one, which is not an insignificant goal, by the way.
Had a bit of an impact on
with the Maple Leafs leading 1-0 in the hockey game. That was egregious. There's just no defending that one. Mm-mm. But other than that, it's like, you can... Boy, was he, like, at center ice on a Brad Marchand power play goal? But it's, it's the Leafs' penalty kill, and it's the Bruins' power play, I guess. But you look at the overall numbers, and boy, the save percentage on the penalty kill is atrocious for Ilya Samsonov. It's under 800. Again, like, I'm not telling you that the Leafs' penalty kill is great. But yeah, you are like...
Because you'd be lying, and you like me.
No, and I'm a truth teller. But yeah, your best penalty killer is the guy between the pipes. Mm-hmm. He's been the worst penalty killer. Also, the overall numbers. He is 18th among goalies in this postseason in save percentage at .883. Are we not talking enough? And I think we're the Joe Woll era starts tonight in Game 5 in Boston, a place where he's struggled and against a team in which he struggled against and got a couple of starts at the end of the season where he allowed a combined 8 goals in a matter of a week. But... are we not talking enough about how the Maple Leafs haven't gotten goaltending in Ilya Samsonov?
So I just pulled this up here because I think when you're right to point out save percentage, like that is the simplest, most direct metric. Something else I looked at, and I think this has to go with the team that's in front of him because I think that has to go, is the high danger save percentage. Now, he hasn't been a stalwart in this by any means. He's 11th in the playoffs. Included in that are 4 guys that have played 1 game. So, you know, he's the 8th best goalie in that metric of goalies that have played the bulk of it. It's .864. You know what that's better than? That is better than Jeremy Swayman's high danger save percentage, which is .789. Not a lot of goalies. 1, 2, 3, 4 goalies in the playoffs have a worse high danger save percentage than Jeremy Swayman. So I don't give you that number to say, actually, Swayman's not been good. No, he has, but it's also been that the Leafs have asked more of Samsonov in that regard, that he has had a higher high danger save percentage and has more goals given up to show for it. It's been a guy who has performed better in the toughest things that are asked of him. Now, there's so much more that goes into it. The Trent Frederick goal is not a high danger chance, and guess what? You have to stop that one. Yeah. It had I forget what the exact percentage was. I actually do remember because it's burned into my brain because I hated it so much. It was 0.82% chance of going in that shot. Not even a one. Again, how they calculate these things, who knows? But sounds pretty legit. That's bad. Can't have that. But I don't know that this has been a case of Samsonov completely faltering and undoing the Leafs. I think it's been more the other way than that.
I can't say it's not on Samsonov, though, man.
No. Like, he is a part of this team, and much like he didn't win that series by himself last year, he ain't losing this one by himself. But I don't think he is, if we're just doing blame pie, I don't think he's the biggest pie eater here.
Oh.
go full of Mighty Ducks.
There is Bumbleberry all over the face of John Tavares and William Nylander only has a little bit, but like Mitch Marner, Austin Matthews.
Yeah.
And hey, Morgan Riley.
Yeah, 1 point.
Anybody that plays on that top power play unit, those guys, like, they have to shower because they're covered in pie. It's like in their hair.
Right.
That's number one for the team that is supposed to score, that was built explicitly to score, that did score during the regular season to the tune of the second highest scoring team in the NHL. That's number one. Mm-hmm. Number one, number one, number one. And I guess I'm getting closer to putting goaltending number two And the discrepancy with it, comparing the Jeremy Swayman of it all, okay, you're right to bring up high danger save percentage. I mean, to me, that also leads to the pie on the face of the right. offensive players. Yeah. Oh, he has a low high danger save yeah. percentage. How can you can't get more high Agreed. Danger opportunities uh-huh. in a first period, which you had none in a pretty desperate game, you would have thought, on Saturday in game four at Scotiabank Arena. You had Bingo. Zero in the first period, 5-on-5. I think they had one on the power play, but boy, yep. I don't remember it.
No, it was on the power play because I remember looking at it, and you referenced it yesterday. I was like, they did? Because I was looking at the same thing, and then I changed it from 5-on-5 to all, and there was one.
Yeah, it was one. Anyways, yeah, man, I'm sorry. That save percentage is that save percentage, and we're not goaltending gurus. We have to mm-hmm. continue to remind people need reminding.
Because even the gurus are like, hey, he looks confident. He's standing tall.
Here's what I think when I hear Sheldon Keefe say that is like, yeah, he's getting some information. He's like, hey, should he have had the world between his legs in that five hole as open right. as anyone's ever had in the history of the sport?
I don't think
when
so.
JVR went backhand through his legs, and they're like, that's probably not great. Mm-mm. Hey, like, should he have committed like he's done multiple times on the penalty kill? Yeah. Man, like, how many Kucherov goals does it feel like mm-hmm. seconds off the opening draw on a power play? It's like, whoa, what an incredible one-timer mm-hmm. by Kucherov. But it's like, well, where's Ilya Samsonov? He's on the other side of the planet?
Yep.
Like, yeah, I think maybe somebody's in his ear, and maybe it's Curtis Sanford is like, that's not, listen, he's been great at times, and boy, can he make a spectacular save or two, and has in this series, but he's costing you, man, because you've had... And I'm not telling you the Maple Leafs have been like far and away the better team in this series by any stretch of the imagination, but yeah, by shot percentage, right? Like it's not like he's getting overwhelmed with mm-hmm. these incredible shot attempt totals or shots on goal totals. It's been pretty abysmal, and he hasn't made the saves.
I think Ilya Samsonov has been part and parcel of this hockey team throughout this series. They've all kind of been the Spider-Man meme, pointing at one another. Have there been moments from Samsonov? Did he make a big save on a shorthanded breakaway early in? Yeah, sure. There have been moments. Much like Austin Matthews had his moment of winning a game single-handedly. I think it's very kind of indicative of the way the entire team has played. Samsonov has not been good enough to steal them games they don't deserve to win. And that absolutely has to be a part of the recipe, not to win a series. I think you can win a series without a goalie stealing you a couple of games. Mm-hmm. But if you want to go on a run, if you want to win a cup, you need your goalie to steal you games. You also need your $13 million center to steal you one.
Yep.
He did that. He did once. You know, if you have a couple $12 million, $11 million wingers, they want to steal a game for you too. I just look at it as, yes, Ilya Samsonov, like, give him his fair share of the blame. I also think when we're having this conversation, we can't paper over the fact that Joe Woll was no good against Boston. And yeah. I'm not talking about when he came in, whatever, it's fine. But he was no good against Boston in the games where they said, hey, Joe, would you like to steal the net possibly for a series against a team you're going to potentially play in the playoffs? And how did that go for him? I think much like Ilya Samsonov, it wasn't his fault they lost those games, but he wasn't able to steal one of them for him either.
No, he wasn't. And again, I think he's going to start. I'm actually blown away if he doesn't start tonight in Boston. We did talk about in previewing this series how short the leash was going to be on Ilya Samsonov. And he wasn't the reason, number one, that they lost game one. Again, it was the power play, like the special teams.
Yep.
The Bruins scored twice, Leafs didn't score. But yeah, he did allow four. There was an empty netter in there as well. If the leash was as short as we thought it was, and I guess maybe part of this was like Joel had to show something at the end of the season because that's part of the equation. But like, was there not an arc? And boy, he was pretty good in game two with Samsonov and the Leafs. They only scored two in game three and only scored one in game four. But, like, was there not an argument to be made that if the leash was as short as we talked about it at times going into this postseason for Ilya Samsonov with basically, you know, two meaningless periods against the Detroit Red Wings separating him with, like, the horrible first period against the Red Wings, is there not an argument to be made that Joe Woll should have been starting in game two of this series, and then who knows how the rest of it plays out?
No, I don't think. I think it would have been wrong to start Joe Woll in game two. You give Joe Woll every chance to grab the net, not just at the end of the season. Again, go back and listen to what Keefe said about this team, about how he felt about the goalies. Don't, like, try to parse the words just a hair, and you'd be pretty clear as to where they were at. You'll want every opportunity to come in and steal this job. I will hear the argument that it was a mistake not going to him in game four for the start. That one I can hear, but I thought you had to give Samsonov at least a couple of games. I thought that unless he came in and just threw up all over himself in game one, which he didn't do, you had to give him the second game. They won the second game, so I think you stick with the winning plan. If they made the mistake in not going to Wall, it was not going to Wall for game four. I can hear that argument, but game two, and part, is it a little revisionist history because they won the game? Yeah, that's how it works a little bit, but go back and listen to the show after game one. I was adamant that you had to go back to Sammy because you're going to need both guys, and now you might be in a spot where you need Joe Wall. Could have gone to him last game, but before that, it would have been too soon for me. Honestly, it would have.
Yeah, honestly, even if, you know, that plays out in a similar fashion, say the Bruins tie that game up and they win it in overtime in game two, and then I think there's a, even if it's not Ilya Samsonov with the egregious goaltending that cost you game two, I think there's no choice but to go to game three. Again, like, he wasn't egregious in the first 40 minutes of game four, but at some point, Sheldon Keefe's like, I got to do something.
Well, I think that was as much about the team as it was about Samsonov. Let me check. Okay. Matthews, again, I think part of it is like, look over here. Hey, team, Joe Wall will be starting the third period. Where's Matthews? As I said, Joe Wall will be starting the third period. So I don't think it would have been the wrong decision to have gone to him a little sooner than this, other than after game one. That was the only time I thought it would have been a mistake, because I think that would have, again, like, I wish we didn't have to do this. I wish we could just talk about a goalie like we talked about any other player. But I think you would have lost him, quite frankly, if you went to Wall after a game one loss that wasn't his fault by any means. I think you would have lost him. And does that say something about why I don't want to move forward with him as a goalie? Yes, it absolutely does. But I think you have to deal with what you have right now, and that has to be part of it.
No, if you go to him in game two, you've decided that that's the end. That the leash is longer for Joseph Wall than it would have been for Ilya Samsonov getting a game two start. As it stands, it looks like Ilya Samsonov's final moment will be the first two periods of game four.
Let's say, just quickly, I know we have other stuff we want to get to here, but let's say it is Wall tonight. What do you expect out of him? Like, I know it's goaltending and it's shake the magic eight ball. I might as well literally ask a magic eight ball, but do you have a good feel? Do you have a read? What are your,
I think it's
your
a good spot for him.
About Wall? Yeah,
I do. I think it's a good spot for him. I mean, again, like, deferring to the goaltending gurus who talk about his sturdiness, his incredible positional play. I think the bar is low for, you know, outplaying Ilya Samsonov. Again, like, one of the worst goalies in the Stanley Cup playoffs so far this season when it comes to save percentage. Yeah. I do think you're going to get the best effort, like, just factually out of this Leafs team that you've had this season because of just the factual nature of their season being over if they don't win this hockey game. God, you're right. Like, just who the hell knows, considering circumstances. But, like, the overall playoff numbers for Joe Wall, pretty good. And yeah, didn't allow a goal.
912 save percentage in his career.
Didn't allow a goal in, you know, at least his last period against the Boston Bruins. Wasn't asked to do too much in the third period of game four. Yeah, I think it's more than possible. And I think I can, like, in my mind's eye, in my most optimistic outlook, can I envision a narrative where it's like Austin Matthews does play at death's door and Joe Wall, goaltender of the future, comes up with his biggest performance of his Maple Leafs career, and this is the hinge point that the Maple Leafs go on an incredible run and win the final three games of the series, and he's the next one.
I thought you were gonna say, and then when we're in the building on Thursday night, they lose, because you know,
it's possible.
I have to say, I'm a big Omen guy. I was talking to my in-laws last night because they're gonna do some child caring if we have to go to that game on Thursday, and apparently I was supposed to go to game six against the Panthers last year, so do with that what you will.
Very good. Speaking of losing, and speaking of the Panthers, Lightning are done. As I guess anybody can now beat them in the first round, as the Maple Leafs beat them in six games last season, five games.
Dynasty destroyers, the Maple Leafs. Some are saying that. Maybe it's their own dynasty they destroyed, but
does feel like it's a different Lightning era right now. It might be one without their captain starting next season. Of course, the season, this regular season started with one of the more interesting press conferences we're going to hear from a hockey player out of the state of Florida, where Stephen Stamkos was like, yeah, I'm like kind of disappointed. There hasn't been much conversation around an extension for me. He is now a free agent. Mm-hmm. This is a team that has $77 million already committed to this team, which is like about $10 million below the projected salary cap for next season. Here is Lightning head coach John Cooper talking about his captain's future.
John, there's going to be a lot of conversation about the future of Stephen Stamkos. What can you say about your captain and if you can imagine him not wearing a Lightning?
I don't know if there'll be much conversation. I hope not anyway. He belongs here. We know it. He knows it. But again, this is 2 seconds after a game, but he and I have grown up together, and he's a heck of a player, but he's also, in control of his own destiny, but I don't know what's going to happen, but he feels like a bolt for life, but only he and Julian can answer that one.
34 years old, coming off an 81-point season, 40-goal season, Brent. But yeah, he's a pending free agent. And like I said, the Lightning pretty close to capped out and just barely made the playoffs and lost in 5 games to a good Panthers team. But what's the point if you're not going to be competing for Stanley Cups? And they weren't with Steven Stamkos at this cap hit at this age with an 81-point season.
Yeah, I am. I quickly pulled up the Lightning franchise leaders. This will shock you. It's Steven Stamkos in a lot. Games played, goals, points, just everything up and down. Game-winning goals, hat trick, goals per game. He is Mr. Lightning, but there comes a push and a pull at every point in time. I think Stamkos is going to have a decision, and I think the most frustrating part about it is that the Lightning are just good enough that he can be delusional and convince himself that if everybody pulls on the rope and everybody takes a little less and I do my part and I want to be Mr. Bolt for life, that there can be competency and, a chance of a fake run of winning around. And I know that's a real run here, but for them, it'd be so fake. And the other thing I said when we talked about this, I think at the very beginning of the season, I just don't see a world where there's the team with the cap space that makes the sense, that's as friendly to Stamkos. And this part of it can't be overstated. He's Teflon there, no state tax, flip-flops all year long. There will never be a bad word said about him. He's Mr. Bolt forever. Why would you go somewhere else? I mean, there is the only way is if he needs to chase more glory. And I don't begrudge him that. I think that'd be amazing.
He wants to maximize his earning.
Oh, yeah, I guess people can. I can never put myself in that headspace. But yeah, you're right. There is a world. But can you see a world where Steven Stamkos just takes the most money and he's not, like, obviously he's not going to be a shark or something, but can you see a world where he goes to some organization where he's going to have lesser possibly chance of winning because he gets more money?
I mean, how much of a chance of winning does he have in Tampa? Again, a team that, they didn't have Andrei Vasilevsky at all for the first half of the season. Then when they got him back, it was slow to get him acclimated. But then he was, like, fully healthy and Andrei Vasilevsky by the end, and they got waxed in five games by the better team in the Florida Panthers. They're not getting better. Like, Steven Stamkos isn't going to have a better season.
No, but my point is where he goes, unless you're going to, I suppose there's some world where he threads the needle and it's, I'm trying to think of what's the team like perfectly on the uptick right now. I guess they need more defensemen than forwards, but what's he going to go be a devil? Cause they have a chance and he can be the, unlike the Leafs, maybe the Devils would go get someone who actually won a cup as opposed to like the Marlowe's and Thorntons of the world. But does he want to do that? I think it's so safe and easy in Tampa. I'm not saying he won't be intrigued. I'm not saying he won't take meetings. I imagine he goes to UFA.
Yeah.
I think when push comes to shove, flip-flops, no state tax, and because he has earned it, no pressure, that's going to be way too appealing.
Yeah, then why did we hear what we heard before the season, right? And why was there this pushback from the organization?
9 months to go, and it's a negotiation.
Yeah, but if you're Julian Breezebaugh, and you're like, hey, we're waiting to see how this season plays out, we're waiting to see how his season plays out, isn't this the scenario where you were envisioning, where it's like, oh, we're not good enough, and you're an aged player, it's like, we're going to lock up our limited cap space and a significant portion of it to you?
Well, I don't think, and I could be wrong in this, I don't think Stammer's looking to ring the bell on another 6 years. I think if he wants to stay in Tampa, it's very much a kind of, and it's not a Giordano situation.
Julian Breezebaugh would have been open to that. Like, if Steven Stamkos before this season was like, yeah, I want to be here, and I understand the cap situation that we're in, I'll take less. It doesn't matter. I got whatever it takes. That wasn't the tenor that we got from him.
No, but I don't think and this player has accomplished more than Tavares, and he just had a better season than him, so it's a different conversation. Mm. But I think that the fact that it's 82 points, Steven Stamkos, colors this conversation. When Stamkos was making that noise at the beginning of the season, it was entirely possible he had his John Tavares 65-point year. It didn't happen. He had 82. Mm-hmm. I forget what the exact numbers are, but it's an absurd amount of points on the power play. I think 20-something or 30 of them came at 5-on-5.
By the way, the Lightning being the best power play during the regular season. Yeah, they had the same Leafs problems during the five games against the Panthers. Yeah. Couldn't score on the power play.
And let me just say it, because I know we're all thinking it. God, if there was a way.
Mm-hmm.
If there was a way.
Well, if there was a way for this to happen, too. I mean, now the more interesting contract negotiation is about to take place. John Cooper's going into his lame duck season.
Mm-hmm.
And John Cooper
to write his own ticket. Who would?
Sure.
Want?
And yeah, more than Steven Stamkos is like an op, because there's no salary cap when it comes to head coaches.
Yeah.
But if you're John Cooper, how are you not going to Lightning ownership and saying, remember the Mike Babcock contract that he got as a free agent head coach to go to Toronto?
Yep.
I want that. Like, I want that.
Yep.
Because I've earned it. And I am that. And if he's not given that.
Does that change what Stamkos thinks? Is that where you're going?
No.
Because
mind goes is if John Cooper doesn't feel like he's being respected as the best head coach in the National Hockey League, which he rightly has a claim to.
Sure.
The Sharks are going to be circling. And yeah, in these parts, it's hard not to
just
connect.
Just to clarify, you don't mean the actual Sharks.
No, not the Sharks.
Yeah.
The Toronto Maple Leaf Sharks, who are, I think we all are under the understanding, and even Sheldon Keefe is under the understanding that if they don't get out of this first round postseason series, his tenure in Toronto is over, and they're going to need a head coach. And I don't think they're going to do the thing that they did with Sheldon Keefe, where it's like, hey, it's the young up-and-coming guy has no NHL experience. I think they're probably going to go down the route, honestly, that they did at the beginning of this thing with Mike Babcock, guy who can throw some rings on the table. I mean, it's hard not to think about the John Cooper of it all if he's not given exactly what he wants in a contract negotiation this offseason.
Well, and that is a very interesting one, because that's where ownership and a general manager, you could imagine, would see completely differently on that. If you're the general manager, and again, there's no salary cap on coaches, so it doesn't matter as much to you what you pay him, but you'd say, John Cooper's going to be a good coach in theory. Maybe, you know, you need to change the scenery, whatever, but like, he's going to be a good coach for the next decade at least. Steven Stamkos, there's a world where you give him a contract that hamstrings you, but I think if you ask the owner, who is more critical to the brand of the Tampa Bay Lightning, and I don't say this to begrudge John Cooper, because, hey, if they do their Legends Row statue out there, Cooper's right there with Hedman and Stamkos and Kucherov.
Yeah, but he's not that without those guys.
Exactly. And that's why ownership would say, okay, I understand, Cooper, you can have him for 10 years, but people don't care about John Cooper. They care about Steven Stamkos. That's why I think, it'd be very fascinating to be a fly on the wall watching that conversation take place. Because with both those guys, ownership, this isn't signing Tyler Bertuzzi to a 1 year Flyer deal. Ownership's involved big time in both those conversations.
Yeah, and John Cooper, I'm sure, wants to be a Lightning for life as well.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what, though? He also wants to get paid what he's deserved, which is all the monies. Yeah.
And again, I can't overstate this when talking about it, and maybe I'm just saying it so I can be proven wrong. You can't overstate what it means to do that there, where it's only, I mean, literally and figuratively, sunshine and rainbows.
Mm-hmm.
It's never doom and gloom. Never is. And wherever they're going to back up the Brinks truck, be it here, be it some other market, it'd be here, there's going to be pressure and almost certainly very little sunshine and rainbows.
Yeah. I think all these guys think about how they're perceived and how much money they make. But I think John Cooper is like maybe on the upper echelon of guys that think about that. I just like a peek behind the curtain. Like it's very hard to get people from the local team, whether they be coaches or players on the radio. John Cooper is generally available. Like John, you can get John Cooper, who is a Hall of Fame head coach, quite often. Like he's, and part of that might be that like the demands on his time from a media market of Tampa, not extreme, but like there's also part of me that's like,
he loves it.
He also, it's part of building his brand and potentially looking ahead to his earning potential when he has one more year left on his deal.
One last little factor on this, and who knows how this plays out, but if John Cooper is, and obviously if he wanted to be, he'd be part of the staff, but he's been the head coach. Like I think we've all looked at him as the guy who should be Canada's head coach for the last 3-4 years. I'm not saying he's not that guy, but we could have a conversation. Do you want Rob Brind'Amour? Do you want, pick your poison in terms of there's a million great Canadian head coaches. I wonder how much that aspect of it, like if he is spurned for this 2025 Nations Cup or whatever, does that make him go, oh God, I need to be in the spotlight more. Huh? This is fascinating. I hope we don't have to talk about this for a long time though, because that would mean the Leafs are eliminated if we're diving into lightning offseason talk.
Or maybe we're talking about a lifetime extension for Sheldon Keefe after bringing the Toronto Maple Leafs their first Stanley Cup since 1967. Hard to put your mind in that spot after watching Saturday's
Borderline impossible.
All right. Talk about Game 5 tonight with our next guest, Jason Bukala, Sportsnet hockey analyst. Next, as the Fan Morning Show continues, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Unrivaled insight, analysis, and opinions on all things Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. Leafs, Bruins, Game 5 tonight from Boston. Maple Leaf season on the line. So it's 7:36 in the morning, Eastern time. Do you think Austin Matthews is still snug in his bed? Just trying to get himself right for tonight's hockey game? Or is he up bright and early, getting ready to hit the ice on a game day skate? Because he's ready to play in tonight's Game 5.
I was going
to
say, rather hugging his bed than hugging some porcelain, given the reports of food poisoning and stomach bugs and all that. So, yeah, I've made it clear. I don't think he's playing tonight, but we shall see.
We shall. He did depart the third period of a rather important game on Saturday with whatever this illness is that he's dealing with. All right, time now for our insider. Brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Today's insider, Jason Bukala, Sportsnet hockey analyst. How's it going, Jason?
Good morning over there, fellas. Late afternoon here in Helsinki, Finland, but I'm doing well. Thank you.
Yeah, how are things in Helsinki? I don't think of like Finnish food as being like all that appetizing. What is like the delicacy?
Reindeer sausage?
Oh, the reindeer is actually pretty good over here. But,
I knew it would be.
Reindeer stroganoff. That's a great delicacy over here. Very good. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, the weather looks okay. For today, at least. There's like a high five coming up. Anyways, enough about Finland.
I have had enough Scandinavian weather talk. This is just giving me flashbacks to the Leafs-Sweden trip. And Ben, you know how much that irked my soul.
Yeah, you didn't like that too much. All right, anyways. Leafs. Trying to improve upon Saturday's performance in Game 4. Honestly, Jason, the opening 40 minutes on a hockey game was about as disheartening as we've seen in this near now decade of Austin Matthews' era. I mean, part of that has got to be as the result of Austin Matthews dealing with whatever illness he's dealing with after that incredible Game 2. How different has his performance, Austin Matthews's, been in Games 3 and the two-thirds of Game 4?
Well, he literally carried the team on his back there for a win on the road. And then clearly something's gone wrong. To be carrying an illness, which seems to be almost lingering for better, at least 5 days, guys, I guess, right? Maybe longer. I don't know.
Like, close to a week.
It seems to me like I'm no doctor, obviously, but they might be sheltering something else there. I don't know, like if it's a lower body injury or whatever the case may be. I'm just speculating, but to be carrying an illness for this long is a little curious at this time of year. And obviously you hope the guy's, or he's well. Ideally, he'd be well enough to come back tonight because, I mean, they're on bated breath here. Like they're, I don't like their chances tonight with him out of the lineup. I'm not so sure I like their chances with him if he is in the lineup, totally healthy, to be honest with you. But, you know, it's a huge, huge void if he can't go.
Yeah, goes without saying. You mentioned the possibility, and again, like I'm not holding you to it. Nobody is. We're all speculating, and the reason why is because the Leafs aren't telling us anything. That's par for the course at this time of year. I'm not surprised that they aren't being super forthright, but I am a little surprised the way they've messaged this. I mean, you know, I think most people are taking the Leafs and Matthews at their word that okay, if he can't go, he can't go. But I mean, Bukla, you've been around the game. I was about to say 1,000 years, but you're such a young man. You know, you're experienced but young at the same time. I don't know how that works. But, I mean, guys played through broken legs. Guys have played through punctured lungs. Are you surprised that the team is running out there saying he's sick? And I know when you say it like that, it sounds like you're understating it, but it is just a tough thing for a lot of people to kind of wrap their heads around, given everything we talk about with the lore of guys playing hurt at this time of year.
Yeah, you know, it's for me, the noise around the way that information is shared with the Leafs is always curious. And you know, we started off the series with, you know, Sheldon keeps saying, you know, no comment on Willie, no comment here, no comment there. And then here, you know, we've morphed into this, well, he's dealing with an illness. And I would have preferred the no comment route. Maybe they're playing mind games with the opponent. I don't know. I don't think the opponent is bothered one way or the other by whatever noise comes from the other side, to be honest. I think Boston's got a culture and a structure there that, you know, they put their big boy pants on and they ignore any type of outside noise. But this here, you know, guys, there's a lineup around the block with guys that are dealing with significant injuries at this time of the year. We all know it. And, you know, it takes me back, you know, years ago I read this Wayne Gretzky book, and it was when the Oilers were about to become a dynasty team, but they had to knock off the New York Islanders. And the Islanders were on the tail end of their dynasty years, you know, those four cups in a row. And the Oilers lose to them in one of the Stanley Cup final, and they're walking by the room, and the Islanders aren't even, like, hooting and hollering and really celebrating all that much yet. And the reason was that they were so beat up and battered that they couldn't get there yet, you know what I mean, to celebrate. And that's part of the sacrifice of this time of year. It's just unfortunate, all the distraction that's going on in Toronto right now. It really is.
It's not ideal, Jason. It really isn't. You know what else isn't? The second highest scoring team in the NHL during the regular season being unable to score against the Boston Bruins. The significant element of that, I think, is the power play only scoring once and clicking along at 7.1%. Well, the Bruins are scoring on almost half of their power play opportunities. But let's focus on the Leafs here for a second, because I get it. Like, you pay all those guys all that money to score, and why not give them a minute and a half on every power play? But it hasn't worked for – it's not just like this is a problem that's arisen in the postseason. It hasn't worked for the last, like, 2 months of the regular season. The Bruins – at the end of the regular season, did break up their top unit. Like, is there a logic behind the Leafs just running two equal units? I mean, something to give them a different look, because whatever they're doing right now isn't working.
I'd be loading up one unit, absolutely, for sure. But here's the thing, guys. Will, at this time of year, trumps skill. Generally speaking, I'm telling you, the team with more will trump skill. And if you look at the Bruins on paper, you know, they've got 82 shot blocks at the top of their lineup, like with their main group of penalty killers and guys that play those roles, compared to the same with the Leafs, who got like 49. So if you look at it just that way alone, if you're getting 9 or 10 extra shot blocks out of the core guys that play those utility roles in playoffs, I mean, that's one of those is a puck in the net, right? So, you know, load it up. Get it, simplify it. Let's get a little bit dirty out front the crease. Let's go mano-a-mano a little bit more. And let's start hammering pucks towards the net. Get in Swayman's eyes. Get in his face. You know, do all of the little dirty things that you have to do at this time of year to hopefully, you know, pocket a key goal on the special teams. There's no chance an NHL team in playoffs who run out two special team units that equal out to be less than 100% combined value. So, you know, call it 80 on your penalty kill, 20 on your power play, for example. What are the Leafs right now? I think they're 63 or something like that total. There's no chance you win playoff games like that.
Yeah, no, it's not been the recipe for them. Obviously, you know, we talk about goaltending. You mentioned Swayman there. Leafs maybe have a bit of a question mark as to who's going to go for them. They pull Samsonov after two periods. I don't think he was completely blameless, but I don't think that was a punishment pull. I think that was more a message to the team, trying something different. What would you do tonight? Would you go to Joe Woll? Would you stick with Samsonov? What would you do, and what do you expect the Leafs will do?
I think they're going to go to Woll. I honestly, you know, I'm not going to lay the blame at the feet of Samsonov in this series to this point. But I will say this, that even on the Marchand goal, if you break down the film on it, you know, he's flopping around at the top of his crease. He's guessing, right, for a puck to come through traffic. He's down on his knees before it goes to the flame. You know, it's an overreaction. That's Samsonov. So when high pressure starts to get inside his head, he starts swimming a lot more in his crease. And you know, he becomes, instead of being 6'2", he becomes, you know, 5'9", because he gets small in net. Woll is a lot less busy, guys. He's a little bit, he's way more compact. He's more reserved in his crease with his crease composure. But I'll tell you, back-to-back years for Joe Woll, like coming in Florida last year, then potentially coming in tonight in these types of high-leverage season-on-the-line type situations, if he can pull a win out of his hat tonight, obviously it'd be a huge coup going back home. I think he's programmed to do it. I would go to Woll. I probably, you know, I was a Woll guy, you know, 3-4 weeks ago, and it wasn't based on merit because I thought they both were pretty average down the stretch. But sorry, it's getting loud in the rink. But you know, I go to Woll tonight.
Yeah, and I think that's where they're going to go. Last one from us, Jason. Mitch Marner, obviously, the poster boy for failure in Game 4 as he's throwing his gloves. And it feels like Austin Matthews and William Nylander are yelling at him. Like, I guess, man, if you're most optimistic about it, could you argue that that's a good thing, that now he knows that the spotlight's on him and that it's up to him to perform? And you know what? He was pretty good in the third period of that hockey game where Maple Leafs finally showed some life. Is there any positive to take out of that interaction on the bench on Saturday?
Not really. Not for me. I mean, I was trying. I like the fact that they're barking at each other. They're throwing the glove stuff. Like, listen, fellas, I've coached my 16-year-old's hockey team recently. If one of those kids would have thrown their gloves on the bench, I would have told them to go in the room and, you know, take a break and, you know, come back another day. Like, this $10.9 million player throwing his gloves in the National Hockey League when in front of you know, the home crowd and whatever else. There's nothing good about it. But, you know, I'm not holding my breath. He better come back really with his big boy boots on tonight, because 6 hits, 1 shot blocked, 7 shots on goal total in the first 4 games of the series. It's not good enough. And listen, you start throwing stuff around, you start to earn negative attention. That's just the way it rolls.
Yeah, no question about that. He's gotten plenty of negative attention. Jason, enjoy the reindeer today. Thanks, man.
Okay, fellas. I'll talk to you again.
Sounds good. Jason Bukala, Sportsnet hockey analyst, our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com.
Would you have guessed reindeer stroganoff? That was like a big curveball for me. I wasn't expecting that. Like sausage, I figured that's like a, you know, it's like a thing. But sure, yeah, why not? I guess. But yeah, who knew? It's quite the delicacy.
I couldn't have guessed.
Feels like a Mad Libs food that doesn't exist. Like it does feel like I said reindeer, and Bukala is just like stroganoff. Very quick. He's like stroganoff. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That's kind of, you know what? I'm gonna have to do some research, find out if it does exist.
All right. Very good. I know. There's been many people that have had this exact phrase uttered either in print or in audio or visual medium after Saturday's loss. It was like, well, this is going to mark the end of an era. This is the end of an era.
Mm-hmm.
Leafs losing this first round series. They continue to play the way they played through the first 4 games, and specifically Saturday in game 4. It's the end of an era.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean to you, Brent? Because I don't know. Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, William Nylander were just handed contract extensions. Mitch Marner obviously due for an extension, but still under contract with a full no-move clause for next season. John Tavares also under contract for next season with a full no-move clause. What does end of an era mean to you?
I think it's all still super up in the air. I think if there is not an end of an era at the absolute tippy top of this with Brendan Shanahan, then what does end of an era really mean? We could talk about Kyle Dubas, and correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like we have in this city just a little bit in terms of the missteps he took along the way. But it wasn't called the Doobie decision. It's the Shanna plan. That his name is on it. Mm-hmm. And I don't say this to, like, I don't think that Shanahan should have been gone 5 years ago, or the second you were ready to move on from Dubas, you had to move on from Shanahan. But if there is going to be the end of an era here, I really think it goes all the way to the tippy top. And, like, the idea that Sheldon Keefe is gone, and I'm not gonna say a Marner trade, not that I think one is coming, because I still think the no-move clause is going to shackle them in a way that they won't be able to make that trade. That I think, so what? We're changing Sheldon Keefe, and it's a new era in Leafland? It certainly wouldn't feel that way to me. Maybe if it's like a Cooper-type person with that gravitas, maybe it feels different. But I really feel like the only way it's the end of an era is if there is a new true direction here. And as much as we all talk about change coming, I don't know that that's where this is headed.
I do think Brendan Shanahan is going to be in big trouble if they lose this first round series. And that will be the end of an era, but that's a lowercase era. The uppercase era is the Auston Matthews era.
Mm.
And that continues.
For sure.
For as long as he agrees to be a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
For four more years beyond this one. Yep.
That's the era. So you can talk about, okay, like, I guess the Mitch Marner element of it, like, that could be ending. And certainly, like, the Sheldon Keefe era, but, like, he hasn't been here from the outset.
Mm.
Brendan Shanahan, yeah, that's an era. Like, that's... Okay, all right, I said lowercase. The E in era is uppercase,
okay,
in that era. But like all caps era,
okay,
is the Auston Matthews era. So like this idea that there's like some massive sea change coming, and part of that is just, hey, TJ Brody's a free agent, yep, and yeah, Ilya Samsonov's going to wave goodbye. Like roster-wise, it's, mm-hmm, going to look a little different. And yeah, Mitch Marner's not an insignificant departure, but he controls his entire destiny. Mm-hmm. And if he just wants to, you know, be the guy that says, you know, screw it, I signed this contract in good faith and I want to be a Toronto Maple, mm-hmm, Leaf, and I'm going to hit the open market without debilitating the team that I go to because they have to send something, mm-hmm, in trade back to you. And that's what I'm going to do at the end of next season. That's a possibility. But like, that's not the end of the era. The era, the defining player of this era, mm-hmm, the only reason we're in this era is because the ping pong balls bounced the way for the Maple Leafs to get maybe the greatest goal scorer, mm-hmm, in this era of NHL hockey. And yeah, it's Auston Matthews. The other stuff is like accoutrement. Like even the Brendan Shanahan, Kyle Dubas,
yeah,
Lou Lamoriello's, like that. Those guys are secondary to Auston Matthews. And while he's not wearing the C now, and I, mm-hmm, think that's probably something that will change maybe as early as next season,
mm-hmm,
It's all about Auston Matthews.
You are not wrong, but I also think that if this goes, I mean, you know, exactly how we want it to go as they come back this year and they're laughing and they go win a cup. Okay, if at some point in the Matthews, like if Auston Matthews has his Alex Ovechkin cup in year 14, please God, don't let it take that long. But having said that, I would sign up for just one,
yeah,
right now. It's not going to feel like it was all one big era, but it's going to feel like kind of parts of, it almost feels like Matthews is like a singer who's had like a couple of different bands. Like, yeah, it'll always be his era, but we'll definitely, like, if the Leafs, let's just say, I was saving this for kind of after, as soon as tomorrow, but I don't know, like 2 years from now when John Tavares is entirely possibly not on this hockey team, mm-hmm, that's going to feel like a new era. But you're right, it will always be the over-encompassing Matthews era, but we will look at it as very different versions of the Leafs. If there's no Tavares or if Marner is traded or walks, that is going to be a delineation point. You're right, it will always be, and it always should have been viewed as the Matthews era, because so long as he's here, the window is open. It really does feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think you'll look back. This won't be like the Blue Jays where it was two, like there's the Vlad and Bo team and there was the, you know, Batista and Eddie teams. I think Matthews will be the through line through it, but you will look at it as two kind of chasms of a world.
Yeah. I mean, you brought up the right guy. It's the Alex Ovechkin era.
Throughout, right.
I mean, there's, yep, been lots of moving pieces around there. It's, mm-hmm, the entirety of it has been the Alex Ovechkin era, and that's the way it'll be defined. All right, time now for the Wake and Rake, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook, 19+, bet responsibly. All right, game 5, 7 o'clock, Sportsnet. The Toronto Maple Leafs, as you would expect, on the road against the Bruins, underdogs, plus 140, Bruins favored at minus 167. The total is 5.5. How do you like this one, Brent? Leaf of Faith parlay. Mitch Marner to score a goal. Total goals over 6.5. And the Maple Leafs to win, paying a robust plus 900.
I don't feel that brave, let me tell you that much. I don't like the over. I don't like Marner to score. I feel pretty not great about the Leafs winning this game. I wish it was different. I think it goes out with a whimper tonight. If it is truly the end of a smaller case era, I think you take the Bruins on the money line, minus 167. Swayman will be great. I think that's kind of how it's going to go. No Matthews. I think that's over tonight.
I think you get an incredible performance from Joe Wall and the Maple Leafs win a 2-1 hockey game. I like the under at plus 100. And that was the Wake and Rake, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook. 19+, bet responsibly. When we come back, talk to a guy who had a front row seat for a Leafs spectacular postseason failure. Jake Allen next as the Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.